Hey guys, welcome to the Wisecrack Podcast. Today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 3 of Rick and Morty. My name is Jared. I'm joined here with the editor of all the Wisecrack content, Ryan.
Hello, world.
And our content lead, Alec.
Hello, internet.
So, last night was the premiere of Pickle Rick. Let's get some first impressions. What did you guys think? I'm actually most interested to hear what you thought, Ryan, because last time you said you didn't really laugh a lot, and this one really doubled down on a single comedic premise. And
I fucking loved Pickle Rick. Yeah, this episode was definitely a step up in terms of the laugh to minute ratio. So, hell yeah. Loved everything about Pickle Rick. Amen.
You know, and I say that because I know that it's a ballsy thing to double down on one joke and just, like, you know, just dwell on it through the entire episode, and they did it, and I tend to agree. I thought it was really funny.
It was a great episode and great just single joke, you know, but also, like, you know, there was jokes sprinkled throughout, like the whole thing with Solania, you know, just that and the whole legend of the pickle that climbs out of your soup. That was amazing. And then it was so violent and gory. And, like, this season, definitely they're ramping up the violence, which, you know, they're bringing the blood, which is cool.
Absolutely. I think that they're actually using a new animation studio, so they're actually upping the whole production value in general, which is great because they'll be able to execute on some really exciting stuff. What did you think, Alec?
I really liked it. I think I liked it a little bit less than the last episode, which isn't to complain at all. But I will say, the cockroaches hit a little too close to home for me as someone who lives in Brooklyn.
Well, are you saying that you have empathy for cockroaches? No. You like seeing them mutilated?
No, absolutely not. Cockroaches are disgusting, vile things that, but you know, you live in New York, you see a lot of them, and sometimes they're in your apartment, and it's always traumatizing, and I'm like, oh, no.
Speaking of which, for those of you watching at home, Ryan and I are sitting across from each other, and Alec is broadcasting from the Wisecrack Brooklyn office, which is essentially just his apartment.
And I want to thank all of our Brooklyn listeners, because Brooklyn and New York are the top cities on SoundCloud, I think.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, you're a local celeb then. All right, let's dive into what we thought was interesting about this episode. I think that it had a very clever structure, and one of the things that I admire most about this episode and the other two episodes is that they're all structurally so different, and the way that they draw comedy is so different, and yet they maintain intelligence, but in very different ways. Last time we talked a lot about how each joke was very dense and can be broken down, and once again, this one is just more of a single joke, the Pickle Rick joke, but yet there's a very clever structure that I can get into later, but first I want to hear your guys' impressions before I just hog the airwaves again like I did last time.
Well, I mean, the Pickle Rick joke was half of it, but then I love that, but honestly what made me love the episode even more was the whole therapist subplot. You know, that to me, it was kind of touching, because I really love the... What is their last name of this family again?
Smith.
Okay. I love the Smith family, you know, and seeing them at therapy, and then hearing, like, how therapy affected all of them, you know, because really the episode's almost like, it's like half Pickle Rick, this one joke, and then half literally about therapy and being emotionally vulnerable and stuff. And I loved both parts. You know, it was touching, and also it was hilarious and gross in a great way.
What do you think, Alec?
Yeah, I like the therapy thing, and I really liked when Dr. Wong sort of gives it to Rick. One thing, I wouldn't say I was disappointed, but I was expecting, you know, when, like, Rick at the beginning is obviously a pickle and gets washed away, I'm like, oh, cool, we're going to get to see, like, Rick out of his element, sort of helpless, and that's going to be funny. We've not seen Rick like that. And then they're just like, fuck it. Like, within, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of the episode, he has already, like, built up this elaborate contraption to, like, kill rats and, you know, manipulate a cockroach, which is a real thing in nature, by the way.
What?
So there's
that's a real thing in nature?
Yeah, so there's lots of different kinds of wasps and hornets that are like adapted towards specific species. But one, I think it's the jewel wasp, will put its poison inside a cockroach's brain and then essentially, like, ride it as it controls it to, like, walk places, and then will lay its eggs in it. And then, like, the little baby wasp will, you know, essentially feed on from the inside of the carcass of the cockroach. So, you know, science points for Rick and Morty right there.
Rick and Morty, 100% scientifically accurate.
Yes.
Absolutely. Once again.
You just got to poke that cockroach's brain.
Speaking of being scientifically accurate, I went and looked up the do cats think pickles are snakes YouTube videos. And they're hilarious. Yeah, pickles fucks cats.
Where did
up.
That cat come from? Since when did the Smiths have a cat? Or is that just
I think it's a street cat.
Street cat. Yeah. Okay.
And, you know, we haven't really gotten a picture of, like, Earth after the collapse of the Galactic Federation or whatever. I mean, I guess they're still going to school, so it must be normal. But I think with, like, the stray dog and or wolf that took Jerry's unemployment check, and, like, I don't know, maybe this is their way of, like, sort of hinting at, like, you know, there's still some fallout from this collapse. But maybe I'm overreading that.
I'm sorry, say that again. What is the fallout from the collapse?
Well, you know, so after Rick takes down the Galactic Federation, there's, like, riots in the streets. Some are saying we're drawing and quartering aliens, and it's the patriotic duty. But none of the episodes are exploring, like, Earth post, like, the Galactic Federation leaving. And the only, I guess we see, like, Jerry with, remember the wolf takes his unemployment check?
Right. So you think that there's just a bunch of feral animals roaming around that kind of left over from the Galactic Federation leaving?
Yeah, like, it might be, like, a nod to, like, the lingering, like, disorder. Or I'm just reading way too much into stray animals.
My opinion is that they're just stray animals.
Yeah, I think they just needed a motivation for a joke. For the first time, I'm not the one spewing bullshit.
I will say, though, that I was psyched for whenever Rick was baking in the sun, and you're like, okay, how the fuck is he going to get out of this? So really, the only, like, deus ex machina, you know, it's like, you know, it starts raining at the perfect time for him to get swept away. And then once he's down in the sewer, smash cut to him, you know, he's found out how to basically survive down there using animal brains. You know, I think that's hilarious and in character, but it's the rain that is the one kind of, you know,
it reminded me of
bullshit.
That Humphrey Bogart movie we saw along was like Out of Africa or something like that.
Yeah.
Where, like, you know, you think everything's just going to shit, and then the deus ex machina is the rain,
right?
You know, saves. Is it also Katharine Hepburn in that movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, I want to dive into some of the things that I found particularly interesting.
No, I'm sorry. It's the African Queen.
The African Queen.
Yeah, not Out of Africa is Robert Redford, and yeah, different movie. Anyway,
thank you.
Keep going.
Thank you. All right, so I wanted to transition the conversation a little bit to talk about some of the really interesting things I thought about this episode. So I talked about this a little bit earlier on, that the last episode had very singular, dense jokes that could be broken down, a lot of paradoxes in the jokes. In terms of analyzing the joke structure of this one, I think the most clever thing is that the A plot and the B plot are very parallel, and they reflect the arcs of mostly Beth and Rick. Now, what I mean about that is that essentially, they're both trying to stonewall therapy. They're trying to stonewall the idea of being emotional, of having to be vulnerable, of having to express their emotions. So it's interesting that, you know, you see Beth trying to resist the analysis of the therapist, and then we cut to Rick doing absurd things just to not be emotionally vulnerable because, you know, he becomes a pickle just so that he doesn't have to go to therapy. And it's interesting how, like, some of the beats are very parallel once again. So there's this intercutting of what is essentially the same arc. So when Beth says, oh, Rick doesn't need anyone, and then the therapist says, oh, and you admire him for that. Then we cut to Rick fighting that rat and basically saying that that rat's not special and that, you know, he loves himself. Remember when he screams like, oh my God, I love myself. I'm such a badass. It's interesting how, in a way, this season is more serialized than any other of the seasons one or two, because even though this pickle Rick thing seems like such a throwaway in terms of it's just one joke, we don't really seem to see a lot of character development. In fact, it actually is very connected to some of the stuff hinted at the last episode. So, for example, Rick is told by Morty. Morty's like, wait, you would rather eat human flesh than confront the problem that is your granddaughter is acting out and, you know, is getting into trouble. And in this one, we kind of see the same thing. It's that Rick is terrified of emotion. He's terrified of expressing himself. So he'll go to absurd lengths, including turning himself into a pickle, to avoid that kind of vulnerability. And we see the same thing in Beth. She's super resistant to the therapist, yet the children are, you know, the ones who are trying to work with the therapist. And, you know, Beth is the one saying stuff like, oh, you charge $200 an hour. Then she says that it's good not to need anybody. And that is essentially what Rick is trying to prove in this episode. He's going to absurd lengths to prove that he doesn't need anybody, to the point where he turns himself into a pickle. And just to prove that, you know, he can get out of any situation. He doesn't need to have any kind of emotional development. He doesn't need to be vulnerable. He doesn't need to express himself. And we see that same kind of development or that same arc within both Beth and Rick, which is really interesting because I like how the show is developing the family members across episodes, even though it's very subtle and it's kind of veiled within this absurd joke of Pickle Rick. But yet we are seeing progress. You know, the first three episodes have all been about a progression of how the family is dealing with the dynamics, especially of the divorce.
Well, then at the end, though, the kids are still in the back. They're kind of, you know, saying like, hey, we like the therapist. And then, you know, it doesn't seem like they really learned much.
Right. And that's classic Rick and Morty, is that they never learn anything. It's almost like Seinfeld in that sense, that there is never any kind of epiphany. Although I think that you could argue that there is a kind of epiphany because, you know, after the therapist meeting, Rick and Beth are talking. They're communicating. They want to go get a drink together, you know. Now, granted, of course, it has to do with drinking, so there's the possibility that it's undercutting any meaning because they're just going to get fucked up together. But, you know, even though they're just complaining about, oh, man, that therapist was a real piece of work, right? Fucking therapist. Even their reaction to how much they didn't like the therapist is still promoting progress. And I think that's one of the interesting things about the episode, is that they ultimately do affirm value in therapy.
I thought it was interesting that we've never really seen Beth as the bad guy, I don't think. With her whole marriage being a failure and everything, we sort of have a tendency to blame Jerry because he's a failure. But now with Jerry outside of the picture and this interaction with the therapist, it's like, oh, Beth kind of has a fucked up relationship with her father, and some of the family dynamics can be attributed to that. And she's essentially enabling Rick to do all these shitty things. And then that scene in the car where it's like, Morty's like, oh, I kind of like this therapist. And she's like, fuck this, fuck all of it. Let's, you know, go get a drink without the kids, of course.
You had mentioned that line of Beth's when she's like, Rick doesn't need anything from anyone. And then Dr. Wong, racist name, by the way, says, and you admire him for that. But then Beth says, better than making your problems other people's problems. And then it smash cuts to basically Rick as Pickle Rick, you know, murdering an entire embassy in Poland or somewhere.
Right.
And so, you know, he's very directly making his problem of not wanting to go to therapy other people's problems, you know.
Exactly. Right. So he's over exerting himself to prove that he doesn't need anybody. And that, you know, he can just kind of control his own problems. But in doing so, he, you know, creates a whole bunch of other problems.
Right. I wouldn't say he's necessarily proving it. It's probably like, you know, because he was really just doing it to get out of it. But the episode is proving it.
Right.
Kind of what you're saying.
Yeah, that's correct. There's kind of an interesting line when he's fighting. I'm sorry, what's the guy's name? Jaguar?
Yeah.
So when
is that Danny Trejo?
Or something.
Yeah, it is. It has to be. Well, Danny Trejo's name was in the credits. It has to be him.
Oh, and Susan Sarandon was Dr. Wong.
Right, right.
So awesome.
That's awesome. So it's kind of interesting how when he's fighting Jaguar, he says, that'll be your downfall. He's talking about how Jaguar says, oh, well, I've never died before. And then Rick says, that'll be your downfall, not being open to new experiences. Now, although this is kind of a throwaway joke, I find it interesting that Rick's downfall is the fact that he's not open to new experiences, which is going to therapy, being open, expressing himself. Oh. So I thought that was kind of an interesting, very sly, quick joke.
And he only goes to save his life, right? It's only because they have the anti-pickle serum.
Right.
And just quick side note, did anyone notice when they're first in Dr. Wong's office and on her door, it says Dr. Wong, family therapy and coprophagia recovery.
Yep, poop eating.
Because her second, right, because her second profession is to help people stop eating poop.
I did not get it until I rewatched it. And then I noticed that they had planned or set up the poop eating business.
Yeah. Anything smart to say about that, Alec? Or is it just, like,
Any science of coprophagia that either of you have researched since last night?
I spent a lot of this morning reading about coprophagia, pronounced.
Let's hear
lots
about it in detail.
Yeah, lots of the word anal fixation came up a lot. I don't know if you saw any of this in the writer's chat, Sharon, but
I glanced at a little bit of it.
So I even came into this episode, and this is partly your fault, Jared. So if this idea is stupid, I blame Jared. But anyway, being like, oh, you know, Rick's a pickle and it's therapy. Clearly there's going to be like Freud jokes, like everything's a dick, yada, yada, yada. And like, it didn't pan out exactly like that. But I
no, it didn't.
But I do think there is just like subtle nods to like Freud or Freud humor. Like maybe there's like one of the writers had read it and slipped some things in. So this one's very surface level. But, you know, when Dr. Wong is saying, essentially keeps framing the conversation on, and this all has to do with the fact that your father turned himself into a pickle. You know, like for Freudian psychoanalysis, which, you know, it's not very popular today because it's mostly bullshit. But anyway, like, you know, everything goes back to like castration and dicks and whatever. So I just thought it was interesting, whether accidental or not. But where poop eating comes in is because, well, first, let me just say this. I think you're right, Jared. In the last episode, you said that Rick is sort of turning into a child, or at least like reverting to it or whatever. When he says in the Mad Max episode, what does he say?
He says something like, oh yeah, I don't want to go back home because my daughter's going through a divorce and I am not taking it well.
Right. And I almost feel like this episode is more sort of like Rick acting a little bit like a child. And even, you know, he turns himself into a pickle, which is kind of like this childish like tantrum of I don't want to go to therapy. And, you know, where his adventures before were somewhat practical, like he has to steal something for his weird science experiments, this adventure is like purely like not inane, but like fantastical and like almost
it's a
like
survival episode.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm not complaining about that at all. This idea of like regressing to a child comes up in a lot of places, whatever. And even if what I'm about to say is bullshit, I still think we could see Rick during the season as sort of taking that weird childish role in this whole divorce thing. But, you know, for Freud, when like there was trauma and stuff like that, we would either fixate on things from our development process or regress to them. So for Freud, there was like this weird development phase where we go through like the oral phase where we put everything in our mouth as a baby, then the anal phase where we really enjoyed pooping. I'm not making this up. And then the like phallic phase, which is where like we discover like sexual pleasure. And, you know, for those of you who know like the Oedipus complex where we want to kill our father and marry our mother, like that's where that develops. And if anything gets fucked up in those phases, you'll often fixate on them. So, for instance, if the anal phase gets disrupted, Freud, or at least the articles I read about Freud's like, you as a baby love taking a shit, but then like your parents take it from you when they like potty train it, like they steal it, like society is literally stealing your poop. So this is where the phrase anal this is where the phrase anal retentive comes from, which I had no idea. You literally want to retain your stuff. So because like you've been traumatized by that, it sort of manifests for Freud in like OCD cleaning, but also, and here's where the episode comes back in, and I apologize for this, eating your own shit is one of the ways it can manifest itself. So this was the weird rabbit hole I went down this morning, and I'm not saying... yeah, so there was a lot
I think this is interesting. Keep going.
I think that is 100% valid. Keep going.
Yeah, so where this gets kind of interesting, and I want to say, I want to, as a disclaimer, like, it's not a one, like, I really tried to think through like, oh, is this the one-to-one, like Rick is dealing through trauma and, you know, going through the phallic phase by fixating on like dick-shaped things or whatever. He's not doing that. But what I do think is interesting, as I was reading about sort of this like anal retentive sort of neuroses kind of thing and people who eat shit, is that the trauma is that either your parents are stealing your shit, or in a more general sense, like society is stealing your shit because, you know, you're going potty in a toilet and it's getting like sucked down the sewer, like, you know, you don't have it. And, you know, kids, he says proof of this is like kids are eating dirt and shit like that, and as adults they don't do it anymore, and most people like adjust with the fact that your parents have taken away your shit. But what I do think is interesting is this idea, like the author said, the sewer is stealing their shit, and Rick literally goes into a sewer, and in therapy they're like, how's that working out for you, you know, you're covered in blood and feces. So again, none of it's literal, but I thought it was super interesting, and I
this
read about
episode,
it.
You're saying this episode is one big metaphor for the step two anal phase of your childhood development.
I'm saying I thought about it a lot. I'm not saying I buy it.
There's also the hot into dog. Hot dog sign.
Yeah, and that also really sold it for me. And this is where it's not one-on-one, because I don't understand how there's the anal phase, but then there's the oral phase and also the phallic phase. So, like, everything's a dick goes more into the phallic phase. But yeah, like I read that sign as like, and it says courage, like some joke about like a dick in your mouth. So like,
well, it does seem that the episode has those elements present. There's the anal phase when we have, you know, all the poop eating talking about. There's the oral phase or talking about, I guess, eating poop plus the whole hot dog thing. And there's all these phallic symbols, hot dog, pickle. No, it's interesting.
And that's why when, and let me find a quote here. Yeah, so at one point, Beth says, like, obviously Summer and Morty are using the therapist's pickle obsession to, like, redirect the conversation. The therapist asks, does Grandpa turn himself into a pickle a lot? And I think, why do we think Grandpa turned himself into a pickle? And because I was reading that with this Freud and also the poop eating thing, sort of, like, in the back of my head, I'm like, oh, all these pickle jokes are dick jokes. But I could be completely wrong.
So I've got a another meta reading. I mean, for some reason, my mind has been fixated on a lot of meta readings now, and so I'm interested to see what you guys think about this. It might be total bullshit, but
hit me with it.
So we're talking about psychoanalysis. Obviously, there's some elements of that in this episode. You know, we can think of psychoanalysis quite literally the term analysis. You know, one is being analyzed, and the entirety of this episode is Rick avoiding being analyzed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when we talk about the difference between this episode and the last episode had very dense jokes that lent themselves to analysis. You could break down the jokes, whereas this episode really did not have that kind of dense jokes, in the sense that, you know, Pickle Rick really was just basically Die Hard with a crazy pickle kind of thing. And so I guess the meta reading is that, on the one hand, in terms of the narrative, Rick is doing whatever he can to avoid analysis being psychoanalyzed, and the episode itself, by, you know, kind of being very much just one joke that is so absurd and just so silly, the episode itself is attempting to avoid analysis.
I like that, because there's one quote. Yeah.
Oh, at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. He says, Morty, stop digging from hidden layers and just be impressed.
Right. Stop digging for hidden letters and just be impressed. So obviously, you know, I think that the writers are well aware that, you know, people like us are really into analyzing the show. And so there's kind of that one level. And also that's what Rick is. I mean, that's his arc. He's saying, hey, stop thinking about why I'm doing this and just go to family therapy without me, because I'm doing anything to avoid it. What do you think?
In the sense that you know, every once in a while, you know, shows have one off, you know, what's the name of those kind of episodes? It's like the Seinfeld garage episode where they're just in a garage the whole time. You know, it's like
The Fly in Breaking Bad.
There's a fucking word for this.
It's not like the spec scripts. You know,
no, it's I'll get back to you. But basically, yeah, you know, it's that episode of Rick and Morty where it's just, you know, this is kind of a different kind of episode. And yeah, I can kind of see what you're saying. But at the same time, the whole B plot of the therapy, I feel like, isn't like that. So
no, I disagree, because once again, Rick is trying to avoid analysis by, okay, you know, by turning himself into a pickle and going on this adventure that in which he risks his life, and it's totally unnecessary. And Beth is trying to avoid analysis because, first of all, she's only there because the principal told her that she had to, so the kids don't get expelled. And she's just stonewalling the therapist. And I touched on this perhaps a little bit, not very eloquently earlier, but the thing I admire most about the episode is beat per beat. Rick's arc is the same as Beth's arc. So, for example, when Beth finally makes just a smidge of progress, when she says to the therapist that she's afraid that her kids will get expelled, that's when Rick has to confront the idea with Jaguar that, you know, Jaguar says, hey, I can't say I love you to my daughter, but you should say it to your daughter. And then Rick goes on his whole spiel how he's not beholden to love because, you know, he's got a million different daughters and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, he's making a bit of progress in the fact that he has to confront the idea that he has to use intelligence, like the therapist says in the next scene. He has to use his intelligence to justify what the therapist calls a sickness, which I think that's probably up for debate whether it's a sickness or not. Basically, he uses his intelligence to justify the fact that, you know, he's uncomfortable with being emotionally vulnerable, with, you know, dedicating love to his family, because then that would make him, you know, not a godlike being. It would compromise his power because he'd be vulnerable.
And what did you think of, I guess, the therapist monologue?
Yes, we do have to get to that. You know, it's interesting that you're talking about Freud, because I was almost positive you were going to be talking about Sartre, because
the choice thing?
Yeah, she says that You seem to alternate between viewing your own mind as an unstoppable force and as an inescapable curse. And I think it's because the only truly unapproachable concept for you is that it's your mind within your control. You chose to come here, you chose to talk, to belittle my vocation, just as you chose to become a pickle.
I actually didn't think about, sorry, I don't think you're wrong at all. I think because therapists talk about choice a lot, outside of Freud, outside of Sartre, all that, like, you know, you can't control everything around you. So, like, I guess it made sense to me that, but I don't think you're wrong. And in fact, like, to me, the monologue was very dense, and I think I had trouble, like, parsing it out in terms of, like, what exactly is it trying to say? You know, is it going to, like, lead us down some, like, interesting arcs for, like, what's going to happen with, you know, Rick or whatever? And I'm not sure, but I did love that line about, like, you know, A, he's using his intelligence to, like, justify anything, and B, you know, it's his choice to be here, be miserable, etc.
So it's interesting, the line before the therapist monologue is that basically when Rick says why he didn't want to come to therapy, he says, I don't respect therapy. I'm a scientist because I invent, transform, and create for a living. And when I don't like something about the world, I change it. And the interesting thing is, like, okay, so you're claiming that because you're a scientist and you can travel between universes and seemingly do anything, that you are all powerful. And yet, why would an all powerful person be on the brink of death looking like a pickle or being a pickle?
Well, he was trying to push himself, man.
Well, that's just the point. I don't think he's particularly happy in the case. I mean, if he was happy, he wouldn't have shown up to therapy begging for the serum. I mean, I think that Rick ultimately has to recognize the fact that there is something wrong with him.
He just truly wanted to live, though.
Well, if he truly is a god, he shouldn't be, as the therapist says, you know, dripping with rat blood and feces. You know, there's something wrong there. And I think there's interesting how her line kind of differentiates between what he chooses to do and, you know, in a sense, what is inside his mind. It's like, you know, she says that the only truly unapproachable concept for you is that it's your mind within your control. So it's almost like she's distinguishing between the fact that he has a brain that is capable of doing anything, but it's under his control. There is kind of this transcendent idea of freedom and choice there, because it's not his genius mind that is, you know, motivating these choices. He is making a choice. I don't know, this almost sounds like, correct me if I'm wrong, Alec, but Kierkegaardian in a way. Like, he's making choices that are independent of his brilliance, and that shows that he is sick or needs therapy or something like that.
I don't understand Kierkegaard, so I can't tell if you're wrong, but it sounds cool.
I was just gonna say that him just being a pickle, all he is a mind, basically. You know?
He has given up choice. Like, when you're a pickle, you have no arms, no legs.
Right.
You know, for somebody who is a genius and can do anything, the idea that he would be in such a shitty situation, he'd be so desperate to avoid showing emotion that he would basically take all choice away from himself by just becoming a pickle, someone who can't run, can't do anything, until obviously circumstance makes it so that he has to build himself or elevate himself above that situation and, like, you know, get shit done.
I think that he also, like Alec was saying, is just challenging himself. And like he said to Rick, to Morty, you know, he's like, just be impressed. It's almost like he literally could have made himself anything. He could have made himself with arms and legs and stuff. I literally think that, yeah, he just is like, well, a pickle would be funny. And, you know, I've regressed to my childhood anal state.
I think that would be the phallic state, Ryan.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry, the phallic state. Like I said, yeah, he could have made himself anything. Why did he make himself a pickle? I think it was just because he thought it was funny, and he's Rick, and why not?
There's definitely an element of randomness that makes this joke so awesome.
Right.
Just because the thing about repairing, maintaining, cleaning is it's not an adventure. There's no way to do it so wrong you might die. It's just work, and the bottom line is some people are okay going to work, and some people would rather die. Each of us gets to choose. I think this freedom thing is quite important. You know, she does state a number of times and even punctuates it at the end that everyone has the ability to choose. And I do think that the episode does kind of comment on the fact that, I mean, there's like a bad faith element here where Rick doesn't want to choose. You know, that's why he turns himself into a pickle.
Yeah, I can sort of see that. I was going to say, talking about freedom and choice, I think some of it goes back to the last episode where we talk about, you know, like modern alienation and how we're all stripped of like agency. And obviously when you're in the post-apocalypse, If you have like a weird killer's arm, you, I guess, have that agency. So Rick's response to the therapist, I think, is what sort of ties some of this together, is he's essentially saying therapy is for those people who are powerless, who don't have any agency to sort of deal with it. He even says, you know, it's a characteristic we look for in our cows so that we can eat them or whatever, but he's a pickle. And
yeah, I'm not a cow, I'm a pickle.
Yeah. And I choose to be. When I choose to be.
Yeah, so I thought it was an interesting nod, and almost like, I don't think like Rick and Morty is trying to vilify therapists or anything, but I guess like an interesting take on a conception of therapy or a sort of criticism that we've actually talked about before in our Inside Out video about how, sure, like therapy is great for helping people work with their issues, but there's also in the societal component, like, oh, what if it's just making you sort of accept what's shitty in the world? And, you know, Rick is like actively against that. He's like, you know, when I don't like something, I change it. And if we sort of put that framework on people like Jerry and stuff like that, like that's the problem with Jerry, is like the world sucks and Jerry just is Jerry about it.
I mean, I would say that Rick and Morty kind of did and vilify. Well, I mean, Rick did specifically, well, not the yeah, show, but like,
yeah.
I like that they went through, you know, they said, all right, this isn't for everybody, basically, you know. It's not for people like Rick. Like, even the therapist said that he would be bored to tears in therapy. And it, I mean, isn't that what she said, basically? And then, yeah. And then, yeah. And then, but you know, it's for other people. It's for people that need it, which.
Yeah.
But I think that, true. but the fact that Rick is on the brink of death as a pickle and, you know, he chose to be like this shows that he does need therapy, especially since, I don't know, what's interesting.
Does he though? Like, yeah. Being a pickle is awesome. Like building like a rat mech thing.
They kind of make a distinction between, you know, like Rick obviously has a problem being emotionally vulnerable. So you could make a case, you know, yeah, he needs therapy. But I think Rick would say, all right, that problem is different than me telling my problems to some woman in a strip mall, which is, you know, how he characterized it.
Right. I mean, okay, so one thing is that, as we know, the show always undercuts any attempt at meaning. But I do think that at least before the after credits thing, I do think that there is some sort of reassertion of the value of therapy because
Rick is fucked up.
Yeah, he's fucked up. He's sitting there once again, you know, covered in rat blood and feces. If he didn't need therapy, he wouldn't have been in this situation. You know, the fact that he chose to do this is pretty indicative of the fact that, and plus, once again, after therapy, there is some progress.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think it's
progress though.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they are communicating though. Like, that's more than we've seen so far. I mean, the fact that they're communicating, the fact that they want to go get a drink. Now, granted, you know, I know that Rick now has a stomach again and, you know, maybe he just wants to get wasted. But that's still a lot more.
But were they not talking before?
No, because as in the previous episode, like, Rick was willing to stay in Mad Max world and give them electricity just to avoid the fact that, as he said, oh, my daughter is going through a bad divorce and I am not taking it well. Once again, this is him being the child. He's avoiding these things. And so now, you know, at the end of the episode, he's less avoiding. He wants to get a drink with Beth. But then at the end, the fact that Rick didn't go to therapy, the fact that he met what's his name? Hawk. I keep forgetting his Volt. No,
Jaguar.
Jaguar.
He flies. So I was like, why would his name be Jaguar? It's like, it should be a bird. But anyway, so he, you know, Jaguar saves him from the pianist bad guy. And as he says, see, this is why you shouldn't go to therapy. So of course the show once again undercuts the idea that, okay, not going to therapy just saved their lives, you know, as kind of a, once again, any attempt at meaning is immediately upended.
See, the only reason I don't think that
into it,
like them communicating, is necessarily a good thing is I think it's reinforcing that they have like a shitty, fucked up relationship that's ruining their kids, you know, for humor. But they've sort of done this before, like the codependency episode with Jerry and Beth, you know, God, what's his name? He's like, they've become codependent. Anyway, I think. Not necessarily that this is codependency, but they are feeding into their worst qualities. So even if they are talking to each other, it's not good.
Not good for the family.
Yeah, or themselves. I mean, Beth seems terrified. Yeah, they do not have a healthy relationship.
I mean, is it just because they get fucked up? I mean, is that what you're saying?
No, I mean, throughout the whole series, you know, Beth is terrified Rick is going to leave. He abandoned her at one point. We obviously know Rick's an alcoholic who's depressed, who maybe sometimes tries to kill himself. And just because they're talking together, you know, lots of shitty relationships, the people should just not be talking together. And I'm not saying
So you think that Rick should leave, and that they have an unhealthy relationship so much that they shouldn't even be
no. I think
living together.
I think I'm not a professional therapist, but if I were, I'm like, you need to learn to have a healthy relation. You know, it's not that you need to be talking; it's that you need to be talking in a healthy, wholesome way that doesn't fuck up your kids and fuck up you for the rest of your life.
Okay.
So I wanted to talk a little bit more about freedom. I don't know if there's anything here, but, they made another 9/11 joke really early on in the episode about how, it being an inside job or, global acts of terrorism happen, whatever. And we've also talked a little bit so far about freedom, about how, even Beth says, it's nobody's choice to be here, you knobs. And, and then, of course, we talk about at the end how ultimately the therapist kind of proves Rick wrong or proves to him that he needs some sort of help or he needs to reevaluate his life by saying that, look, you're brilliant and yet you still have the burden of choice, and that burden of choice is leaving you to be covered in rat shit and blood. And I just kind of want to bring up, I don't know what this 9/11 kind of freedom thing is, but remember how in the Szechuan sauce episode there was that part where you could barely hear it. But you see Rick in some sort of, I guess he's inside his memories or something, and he's watching 9/11 happen on the TV, and he says, oh my God, they're going to use this event to take away our freedoms, and you could barely hear it. And then, now we have this other episode that's about choice and freedom, and he makes this kind of 9/11 joke. I don't know if this is going anywhere. Is it just kind of like an inside joke between the writers? Am I just kind of looking at stuff that's not there? Right now, I certainly don't think that it means anything at this point. I think that, it might kind of become a pattern that is fleshed out further in the series. But right now, it's just something on my radar.
But other than the fact that there was two 9/11 jokes, what do they have to do with the themes of the episode, though? What are you saying?
I'm just saying that this episode has to do with freedom, with this idea that, once again, Rick is in a fucked up situation because he's brilliant. He can seemingly create and change anything he wants in the world. He has ultimate choice because, once again, he can do almost anything. And yet, obviously, there's something wrong with him because at the end of the episode, he's on the brink of death, covered in rat shit and rat shit and blood. And all I'm saying is that, so freedom is part of the episode. There is a 9/11 joke. And then in the first episode of this season, Szechuan sauce, they make a joke, or I don't even know if it's a joke, but it's a line that explicitly connects 9/11 with freedom. And so really, I'm not really drawing any conclusions about that. I'm just saying that this is a pattern that I'm going to continue to look out for in the future episodes.
Yeah,
it's
on my radar. I also thought about that.
Is that a 9/11 joke too?
What?
Just kidding.
I also thought about that, but they're not that. The most recent joke wasn't necessarily about freedom. What was the full context
of? You mean in Szechuan sauce?
No. I very specifically remember the Szechuan sauce. In this one,
in
when
the
he's
new
talking
one, Morty. It was basically like Rick. I mean, Morty wasn't acting as impressed as Rick wanted about him being a pickle, right? So then he was like, "Global acts of terrorism. That's something that happens every day, like 9/11. Not this."
Oh, gotcha.
This is something that's,
this is
unique.
Impressive. Yeah.
This is impressive.
Right.
All right, I'll be on the lookout for more 9/11 jokes. Thank you,
Jordan. All right, guys. Well, we kind of covered a lot of the episode there. Before we go, we've got some listener comments that we wanted to address. Alex got them in front of them, so take it away.
Yeah, and just thank you everyone who reviewed us on iTunes, left comments. We also had a video sort of that was the distilled version of this, all the people who commented. So we just wanted to pick a couple out. Some of these are simple questions like, Jared, what is The Third Man you referred to last week?
The Third Man is a noir film directed by Carol Reed, starring Joseph Cotten and Orson Welles. It's a pretty seminal noir film. It's pretty awesome. I highly recommend seeing it. Ryan, do you know what year it was made in?
In the freaking 50s, I think. 40s, maybe.
50s,
but,
yeah.
It has an awesome score, is one really cool thing.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. It takes place in kind of Austria post-World War II, kind of like, society is more or less crumbling, or, in chaos, and basically Joseph Cotten's character goes to search for his childhood friend Orson Welles, and Orson Welles has kind of become almost like a Joker-like figure in how he's, I won't give anything away, but the conversation I was referring to is a very famous scene between Joseph Cotten and Orson Welles at the end that's really, really awesome, so I definitely recommend checking it out.
Yeah, next thing, this was more just sort of rumblings in the YouTube comments, but I noticed a couple of people were asking about A Philosophy of Jerry. What do you think about that, Jared?
I think that once again, since we've seen in these last three episodes some continuity of arcs between the characters that we haven't really seen in seasons one and two, I think that by the end of season three, we'll be able to probably execute on a pretty good philosophy of Jerry. So I think probably for now, we're going to continue to do quick takes. But I think by the end of the season, we're definitely going to have some good stuff to do. And I would love to do a philosophy of Jerry.
Yeah, the last comment was actually someone on YouTube. We had spoken about this on the podcast, but not in the YouTube video, was a little upset that we didn't mention the Morty bot gaining sentience joke in our YouTube video. And the more I've thought about that, I know you really like that joke, and I think so did Ryan.
Oh, yeah. I'm kind of mad we didn't mention that either. Yeah, that was an awesome scene.
This is my hot take for the day. This is how I'm going to anger people. I thought it was a cheapening of the pass the butter robot joke and all these other better
Boo.
Jokes.
Boo! Yeah. So funny.
Well, yeah, but the pass the robot joke, I mean, he realizes that his existence is meaningless, but he never, like, you know, has this awakening of consciousness when he tries to consider the idea of emotion. I think it's pretty different.
Yeah, no, I think it's different, but I think they, like, tacked on that theme. Or even, you know, you've mentioned a lot, like, the Frankenstein complex that happens, like, people resenting their creators. Like, I think Abradolf Linkler is, you brought me into this world of suffering abomination. And I think it's that same vein of joke. I just think in context of all the other jokes like that, it was probably my least favorite.
You're saying that, I thought it was hilarious. You're saying basically it was a funny joke, but when you rank it amongst the Rick and Morty robot jokes, it's one of your least favorites.
I guess so.
Or like the existential.
the existential, oh my God, existence is pain, or you brought, you know, all that stuff. There's so many of them. I think they need to up their game on existence jokes.
I thought that was actually one of my favorite jokes of that episode. So, hey, agree to disagree. All right. So any final thoughts on the episode, guys?
All hail Pickle Rick.
Pickle Rick.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is another. I don't know if I would call it top shelf freaking more. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I have no complaints. I love this episode. Honestly, I've thought that every episode of season three so far has been great, and I'm very happy to continue talking about it. So, thanks everybody for listening. Alec, do you want to have any shout outs to people? How they can continue to listen?
Yeah, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Definitely make sure to leave us a review. We're going to keep asking you. It helps people discover our podcast. It means a lot to us. And thank you for everyone who did leave a review. We were surprised at the very warm response we got from the internet. We kind of figured people might like it, but everyone's support's just been so amazing. But, you know, if you're not on iTunes, we're on Stitcher, we're on Google Play, we're anywhere you can get your podcast. And if you're on none of those things, you can still get us on SoundCloud.
Yeah, I really appreciate the kind words, especially since Wisecrack thus far has been very scripted content, and we very much fancy ourselves writers, and the whole idea of doing this off the cuff thing is pretty new to us. So thanks for supporting us and you know, kind of following us on our journey.
And thanks for sticking with us through the many ums and you knows.
Yeah, we're very new at this.
Yeah, you know, there'll be more to come for that, but
we're getting better. All right, guys, thanks again for listening. Catch you guys next time, next episode of Rick and Morty. Thanks, guys.
Squanch you later.